Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Thank you for tuning in. It's Rack Addicts After Hours time again, and it is my pleasure to reintroduce Luke. This is your third episode now, right? Because you won, and
this would be third? Number three. Yes,
this is three, but two. Now he's made it. He's made it, everybody. He's in the Rack Addicts WhatsApp group, so he's going to be a regular boyo.
Hooray! Pleasure. Thank you very much.
So that's going to be great. We've actually also in the sidelines, we do have a couple of friends from work, two enormously talented drummers, and Luke's a very great drummer as well. I think we name-dropped him a while ago. We do have Colin over there. Hello, Colin, from the 10 Out of 10 Function Band, Stiff Biscuit and IC Shapes. We also have Cody as well from Lawlia, Scattertones and Homeblood. If you are interested in any local music, not that you necessarily know where we are, but give those a Google. Some excellent bands, some incredible musicians. Weekly update time. It's so damn hot. Oh my! We're sort of 30 plus in England, and I don't know about you guys, but I sort of cease to function after 18, I think, is my point, where it just gets too warm and I can't do anything.
Is that degrees or 1800 hours?
Either. Yeah. Nah, 18 degrees Celsius, and then I stop. I stop. I wish air conditioning was more common here.
It's not just the heat, it's the humidity.
Yeah, it's all
that's
bad.
That's the one that gets you.
Definitely. And fans just blowing that lovely warm air over you and not helping at all. But no, we'll get there. I'm in the middle of moving, so I've just been twiddling my thumbs on the internet since that's all I've really got that isn't in a box right now. But what have you guys been up to?
Well, I've been helping out or going out or to help out. I think that's the phrase, isn't it? Eating out to help out.
Oh,
which
yes,
is the scheme the UK government has implemented to try and save the dining out
economy, microeconomy. I don't know.
Yes.
How many times can you do that? Can you just keep going?
It's for the whole of August
my.
Anyway, and it's
cool.
Mondays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And
my day's off. Excellent.
There is a limit to it, but any eating inexperience, if the participating restaurant is participating, you can go and effectively most meals, not including alcohol, are virtually half price.
Yeah.
There is a cap to it. But I thought I'd give it a go. My son had been out with his girlfriend and had been extolling the wonders of Wagamama's.
Oh, love it.
I hadn't been to for a time. So we shot over to the Bracknell branch and popped in there, and it wasn't until about 5 minutes after I sat down that suddenly it dawned on me I was sitting in a crowded, packed restaurant, and it was a very strange experience. It's something I haven't done in, well, a good 5 months at least.
Yeah. Did it work out all right? Did it feel okay?
That was the point. I was strangely unmoved by the situation. I was more joyous about the meal I was just about to consume, and I wasn't at all perturbed about the density of the situation. I mean, they had the, because anyone that's not familiar with Wagamama's, they've got a sort of long bench kind of setup.
Yeah, where that sort of makes me a little bit nervous, that.
Well, they've got the Perspex divides,
yeah.
And it's divided the bench and sort of long table situation into sort of groups of four. And then all the staff are wearing sort of a certain amount of PPE. They've got the face visors and so forth. But I'm not sure how effective any of that stuff really is.
Not in a restaurant situation, at least.
And it was quite packed. There was a lot of people taking advantage of it. So, but yes, suddenly I had this kind of, I just had this epiphany about 5 minutes in. Suddenly, my God, I'm surrounded by people.
Yeah.
strangers.
Maybe that. I remember we were saying before that it might have certain long-lasting impacts on how we feel about certain things, but maybe it won't be so bad once we do go back to how we were.
I think with the Perspex dividers, I didn't feel I was being encroached on, and the staff seemed to be very sort of polite and thoughtful. And we weren't in there too long. We had a very nice meal and just departed. But and also, it was very inexpensive.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's only going to last till, as I say, the end of August.
August.
And that's the end. So hopefully that will help kickstart things, but it depends how things go.
Nice one. I definitely need to get out there on that, I think. What about you, Luke?
So I had a similar, I did the same thing, but I had a very dissimilar experience. We went to
The Zizi's in Bracknell, just opposite Wagamama's, as it happens. One evening, out of the blue, we just decided, okay, let's try it. Let's try the new normal. Let's go and see what the, you know, the it wasn't an eat-out-to-help-out day, but it was a, I think it was a Friday night. So I expected it to be quite busy, but it wasn't particularly at all. We phoned up, as you do, booked a restaurant table, and got a nice seat outside. And, yeah, it was quite a pleasant experience, and everything was, I felt safe. There wasn't a huge amount of PPE going on in terms of the actual, what the staff were wearing, but, you know, we turned up in our masks, and there was a good deal of, like, let's set some boundaries before we start serving you. I'm going to put the food down at the end of the table. You pick it up when I've moved away. And we were like, yeah, that's, I don't mind that. It was inoffensive, and just enjoyed having a meal out. But, the strangeness of it did strike me that, for instance, the town centre was incredibly quiet. But overall, positive experience. Other than that, I haven't had a very busy week. I've just been actually practicing drums for a change.
Amazing. I haven't practiced an instrument in so long. I almost feel bad about it. Now, I did actually did just remember that I do have a bit more of an update than I had previously thought. We almost mentioned last week that there was a certain modular on the spot style thing happening with the modular cafe, but I didn't mention it just in case one random person from English Heritage happened to hear. So we actually had a little battery powered synthesizer-y ambient jam thing at the ruins of Waverley Abbey in Farnham, and it was amazing. There are a bunch of punters there, random people who are having picnics or just watching the sunset, and none of them put up a fuss. One of them actually applauded after one of the really good ambient sets. It was really nice. And there's kind of a square in the ruins, which may have been actually a square in the abbey, where, you know, open space, but there's lots of walls up there, so the high frequencies were scattering in a really nice way, and it wasn't too hot, so it was a nice breeze, and we were just kind of
sounds very nice.
It was a great evening, so we're definitely going to be doing more. We're not going to tell anybody when they are, unless it's somewhere obviously we do have permission to be, but yeah, they'll be on the Modular Cafe Facebook group, so if you know one of us, we'll let you know when they are. Definitely there's a few synthesizery related releases I think we should get out of the way before I think Luke has got another few space related treats for us. Am I right?
Oh yes, indeed.
Ooh, delicious. Right, Bastille MIDI Looper, that's another one from Superbooth. Was it now?
I'm thinking Superbooth.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Pete, you say you're interested in this one. I wasn't, so I definitely didn't watch the YouTube video when it came out, but I do know and love Bastille. I love their stuff. But yeah, what's the vibe with this little box?
Well, I saw it demonstrated on YouTube last week, and this sort of ties in with the announcement that it's now available. So it was initially...
It's a prototype, I suppose, first, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was initially shown off at Superbooth, I believe. I didn't see it personally. Again, as I always say, a lot of things sort of slip past my notice.
Especially when the YouTube subscription feed just gets kind of assaulted by any kind of trade show that's going on.
So I saw this demo last week, and it just immediately thought, is this something that I actually need? And the whole idea is to... loop MIDI rather than loop audio. So think of it just like a looper with multi-parts, so you can loop two, possibly three, I want to say, at least two parts anyway. And it has various other elements. It can quantize. It's got some CV stuff. It's quite a general sort of integration tool. It's, in some respects, it's a bit like that MIDI hub thing that I sponsored.
Oh, yeah. It's quite flexible, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is more immediate, so... there's something that I wanted to do, actually, that I'm preparing for the Modular Caf, or when all that
one of your thing. One of your live sets, when it cooks.
And
cooks
this
up.
Is going to fit the bill. The only problem is it's rather expensive.
Ooh, yes, I did just notice that.
Yes, it is rather expensive.
Yeah, that's a good chunk. As I said before, I do love Bastille, but it's likely going to be... They tend to do like really thick PCB plates for their enclosures.
Yeah.
And imagine it's just going to be some digital kind of gubbins on the inside. Yeah. That's a chunk.
About it, really. There's not too many places stocking it this time. There was a few places threatening to have it.
Threatening, yeah.
And there was one place that's got it in the UK that I found. And and this is where I've got this price from. So this is an actual price for a retailer who's stocking this product.
Yeah, it's a chunk. It'd be a pretty cool kind of expansion for some. If you've got a really nice MIDI controller that you like a Keystep or something, Yeah, it could be potentially
well,
quite
you,
a nice
way
little expander.
I would utilise it. There are certain parts that you could play in, but when you can't be twiddling your knobs and filters and bits and pieces while you're playing. Mm. So you start off, you play, that's recorded in, it starts continuing playing it, the loop that you played in, that gives you the ability to then start
just add
working.
Some CCs on top.
Yes. Mm. I think it can record all that as well.
Pretty cool. Ah,
so
the options are opening up.
I am very interested. It's a lot of money to hand out in a little black box.
Totally. Although, I mean, the looping workflow has always appealed to people because it's so immediate. Instead of, you know, messing around with Ableton or something to get your loops going, all you're doing is just playing your instrument how you normally would. If you're talking about audio looping, like guitar stuff is really, really popular. Again, if you're trying to do a synth part, simple bass line, but maybe with some parameter automation and things, it's going to be a much more sort of ergonomic and intuitive workflow if you can just play it and then sort of do your tweaking rather than, if I'm just thinking about Digitact again, hold step, change parameter, hold next step, do the thing.
Exactly.
So you can obviously record it in, but be quite immediate this way without having to mess around with
the
menus.
Yeah, that's exactly my thoughts, that you could just put a chord sequence or a lead line in, and it's straight away, it's looping it, and it'll do a bit of quantizing if you want. It's got some clocking facilities. You could tie it in with this. I was quite impressed by the demo, put it that way.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks pretty cool. Hopefully we'll see some more, less of a demo, more of a, this is how I've been using it in my setup. Hopefully some of that comes out a little bit more.
Yeah, well, it might be me.
The people who push its capabilities, they're always fun. Now, noise engineering. I've been a big fan for quite a while, mostly because their customer service is incredible. So I think it's just two people, and you email them, they reply next day, like, oh, yeah, this is how you do the thing. But they've got a stereo DSP platform now, Desmodus Versio, which apparently means Latin vampire bat in Latin. Versio, versatile. Desmodus is vampire bat.
It's a versatile vampire bat.
There we go.
This is another one from NAMM at the beginning of the year, and it's only now hitting the shops.
Wow.
Yeah, it did remind me of, do you know the Earthquaker devices Afterneath, which is now a Eurorack module as well as a pedal?
I saw one of those recently.
Oh, nice one. Yeah. Whoever bought it had had good taste and an excellent customer service experience, obviously. So that's kind of one of those pedals that is sort of a cluster of delays, and then you can morph it into that really smooth reverb. And there seemed to be a lot of that going on with this in the demo that I saw.
Yes.
And having the tails, or the, they call it regen, having an infinite portion, that's always fun. I love those kind of pads you can make.
Again, I'm quite interested in this. Mm. It's... for reverb, it seemed that you could push it quite hard.
Yeah, if you want something completely unnatural, it's really cool.
I also thought it'd be quite a good complement for the unit that we talked about last week, whose name
was... What were we talking about?
It was the sort of... I wouldn't say it was a ring clode. It was rings-ish.
Oh, yeah, Qubit Surface.
The Qubit Surface. Mm. This... up against it, it's kind of like rings and clouds, but on steroids.
you've heard rings and clouds. Now get ready for Desmodus Versio and Qubit Surface. It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well.
I've got rings in the clouds anyway, so I think these potentially going to
get that Qubit Surface, and you can do the face off video for us.
Yeah, but these are all for my little two rows of 84 HP live thing that I've still yet to build.
Again, threatening to build. We'll see it one day.
If there's things to do, if there's things happening, then there'll be, the motivation will be there.
Totally. And one thing that will be cool for people who are much cleverer than me, open source stuff at the end of the year, so you'll be able to write your own firmware for the thing. So potentially, if I can ever convince Amy from the ModCaf to step away from her entirely noise engineering, not noise engineering, I'm thinking of the wrong brand. She's got entirely make noise in her system at the moment. If we can convince her to step away, I think that might be quite cool. On our ModCaf hangs that we've been having on Zoom since we have been meeting, sometimes she'll put her mic through Pure Data and be like, this is how old 80s reverbs work, and just demo it for us. It's amazing. So that might be right up her street if she abandons make noise, at least. Cool stuff.
Luke, are you ready?
I was
Is it time
maybe.
For some Spacey Boys?
I believe
Spacey
so.
Spacey Boys with Luke. Yep, we'll have a jingle for that, much better than mine eventually. What have we got in the world of everything that's not in the world today?
Well, last week I rather incorrectly, pardon me, referred to a mission to Europa, which is not happening. Rather, I was talking about Dragonfly, a mission happening on the surface of Titan.
How could you mislead us like this?
I know. So, the Dragonfly drone is going to be a quadcopter that we're going to launch.
Yes, I remember we talking about that.
Yes, indeed. I say the near future. We've got a prospective launch date of the 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And it will then embark on a very long journey, landing on Titan in 2034.
Which planet's moon is that?
So Titan.
Bad with the moons.
Yes.
Don't tell anyone.
So Titan is Saturn's largest moon.
Okay, cool.
It is the to call it a moon really is only a technical point. Because,
because the planet's bigger than...
it's rather large.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Titan is bigger than Mercury.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it actually has a comparable atmosphere, in some ways, comparable atmosphere to Earth. It is about 13% of Earth's gravity in terms of its mass, which makes it very easy to fly a quadcopter.
Nah, of course.
And we have an atmospheric pressure of about 1.45 times that of Earth's. So, again, given that it's very thick and soupy atmosphere, very low, yes,
yeah.
Very low gravitational pull, it gives ample means for us to fly a quadcopter, something that we can send there. It doesn't necessarily need to be very light. It's kind of the antithesis to the Ingenuity drone we were talking about last week, the Perseverance quadcopter, dual copter.
Yeah, it was the contra-rotating
yes.
type thing.
So
that looks endearingly homemade. We love that.
Yeah, it's a very, very cute little device. Dragonfly is altogether much more complicated and big and heavy. And because of that, essentially, you can load a lot more, many more devices and tests onto that kind of drone frame, because we don't have to worry so much about the lack of atmosphere that we have on Mars. So with Mars, obviously, we don't have a very thick atmosphere. The quadcopter has to be incredibly light. The drone, rather, has to be very light. And it has to spend a lot of time fighting the fact that it's trying to push through a very thin air off of quite a heavy object. But with Titan, we don't have that problem, because it is quite big. But it's a hell of a lot smaller than Mars, and the atmosphere is a hell of a lot thicker. So the main objective with this one is very interesting. So again, it's extending our reach into the outer reaches of the solar system to look for possible signs of life. Because, of course, the first place we're going to be able to reach is the edge of our own solar system. And Titan is very interesting in that respect. So we have a couple of spots that we've been able to scout out using the Cassini probe, which has been going round and around Saturn until it recently just crashed into the surface after completing its mission and running out of power. There's a very sad little video on that. If you go head over to the YouTube, you'll see a nice little documentary from NASA on the end of the Cassini program. And it's quite nice. It's a nice little farewell to Cassini, and it shows how how much data was gathered from that mission, how it exceeded expectations, and how it essentially used its last few dregs of power to plow into the atmosphere of Saturn and send back some data that we'd never get otherwise, which was really interesting. So again, thanks to Cassini.
Sacrificed itself for our knowledge.
Yeah, a nice way to go for a drone,
totally.
I feel, especially one out there in the big wide world.
Yeah, there's actually, while I think about it, there's a really good song by Big Big Train, called Voyager, obviously about the space probe. So if I'm right, Voyager is one of the ones that's just flying straight out, because it's gone beyond the edges of the solar system now.
Yes.
Am I right in that?
Yeah, we're
They got a song about it. They're like, I'm so sorry, please don't leave, we love you really. And it's kind of cute. Good song, check it out.
Voyager is, long gone. I think we're now past getting close to the Oort cloud, which is the very outer reaches.
Yeah, there's totally a band called Oort cloud, or at least an album.
Music they play.
Probably very spacey prog rock. If my dad likes them, it's going to be prog rock.
Yeah. Lots of time signatures that are not four.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Organ solos. Yeah.
Well, if it isn't a band, we should make one.
Totally.
So yeah, that's obviously gone very far away, and it's now in what we call intersolar space. It is beyond and outside our solar system. So Voyager is very much gone. But the Cassini probe was very helpful in informing the Dragonfly mission, because, again, we used the flybys of Titan to look at some interesting spots on the surface of Titan to search for life. And one of those places is called the Selk Impact Crater, where there's thought to be evidence of past liquid water and organic compounds. That includes things such as carbon, basic building block for life, possibly water, we hope, and anything that might contain oxygen or silicon. So that could be very interesting. So that's one of the places that Dragonfly is going to land.
Interesting that silicon's one of the things that... Why would we be looking for silicon? That's not something that seems to come up on my very limited knowledge, my radar.
Yeah,
why
so
silicon?
It's not really... This is sort of reaching into sci-fi, I suppose, but silicon is obviously something that you find a lot in rocks, and we're going to be looking primarily at, you know, rocks and geological samples that have been weathered and broken down by water. So any presence of like silicon interacting with other organic compounds is going to be interesting for looking at. Essentially, this is where Cassini has used a very distant method of mass spectrometry, looking at the geology of Titan from a great distance, where we're going to be looking at what chemical compounds they can see. Now, it may not be relevant to what Dragonfly is doing, but the point is, if we can see that stuff from orbit, then we may be able to go down, look better at it, and see if perhaps that might be more interesting, to see what compound silicon might have formed with other molecules, and whether or not they will form organic compounds that could be interesting to the mission.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, yes, that's scheduled for 2026. It will leave Earth on an Atlas V rocket or something similar, something very big with two stages.
Mm-hmm.
It can go very fast. And it will weigh approximately 450 kilograms, which is, again, quite heavy for a wee drone.
So is that the drone itself? Yeah.
Yeah. So about half a ton.
Yeah.
Of a quadcopter.
Yeah. Now you're saying it's that much weight. I'm imagining literally just, you know, those really small, there's probably quite a famous, is it like the Bell helicopter or something?
Mm.
Either way, it's like really lightweight, small. I'm just imagining sort of somebody strapped the tail rotors together and like, yeah, it's a quadcopter, I swear.
Yes.
That's what I've got in my head right now.
Perhaps, yeah. So yeah, it's going to be quite big. It's going to be it's going to fit into I haven't now because Dragonfly is kind of still in development. I couldn't get any precise dimensions of it because given that mass, I was really excited to see how big it was. What's its wingspan? How big are the rotors? You know, what are they going to pack onto it? But all I could find out is that it's going to fit inside a heat shield that's going to be about 3.5 meters wide in diameter. So it's going to be a little bit smaller than that, but it's going to be quite big. So it's going to be really interesting to see videos of this enormous quadcopter drone flying across the surface of an alien planet, which is
quite exciting. They'll probably have some system where the arms supporting the rotors all, like, you know, fold out so they can get a bit more
stability
or something.
I don't know. I've seen some videos of the planned landing sequence, and essentially it's not going to land. What they're going to do is they're going to drop the payload in orbit.
Yeah,
it's going to aerobrake, much like most drones do. The heat shield will detach once it's through the worst part of the atmosphere and slowed down enough. And then basically, once it slows down enough, they're just going to fly out the bottom. Which
pretty
is
cool.
An excellent way to launch an airborne vehicle, I think.
Yeah.
It should be very graceful. If all goes to plan,
of course,
and it doesn't land on the surface of Titan in the great heap.
Yeah, we can only hope. Nice one. Always love a little bit of space education. We were saying last week it's something that I've never done my own research in, because anything sci-fi has always interested me, but I've never gone too far in. So an absolute pleasure, as always, to have a little bit of space education.
Not at all.
Space education, maybe that could be the name of the little segment. Who knows?
Speducation.
Speducation, I love it. Right, I reckon we've got some YouTube recommendation times. Mm. Now, I did actually plan mine in advance. A channel and a guy called Jacob Geller, who does a lot of quite talky videos all about video games. And I found him from a video called The Decade-Long Quest for Shadow of the Colossus' Last Great Secret. So supposedly, the person who wrote, designed, coded, and who's kind of heading up that game when it was made, left a lot of various lore-related secrets and hints, and there's lots of people really getting into playing the game. So if you know the game, which I don't, but there's a certain number of kind of giant creatures, machines, boss fights, in effect, that you have to go and do. And some of the hints were to the order of, oh, but what happens if you defeat all of them again in a different order? So, like, the people who are searching for these things have been playing the game multiple times over and doing really, really strange bits. But that particular video, the concept behind it, don't know if it was necessarily the most interesting thing in the world, but the delivery by Jacob Geller. So he's going to be talking over appropriate footage of the game, There's something really engaging about the way he paces his videos, especially with this one, which is, you know, the last great secret to the searching. There was a certain mystique that he commanded during that video, and they're really, really engaging. But what I think might interest you, potentially, Pete, is his most recent video called The Intimacy of Everyday Objects. And I saw the thumbnail, and it's like this cutesy little hand-drawn thing. I'm like, what's this all about? I didn't even remember who the guy was. Like, what channel is this that I've subscribed to? What's going on? This was a response to an update to Half-Life Alyx, which was the liquid shader. Do you know about the liquid shader? Luke knows about the liquid shader. I only just know now. So in a lot of video games, water, in particular water for drinking and in beverages, is always really weird. So they've developed this this shader. So what ends up happening is Half-Life Alyx is a VR game. You can pick up a bottle. Got a bottle here that's filled with liquid, and as you move it around in VR, the liquid behaves really, really well compared to what you'd expect in real life. So you can shake it, it'll make bubbles. You can turn it upside down, the air gap will be on the right end, you know. And he was talking about how that really tiny detail that's pretty pointless in the scope of what's a game really helped his engagement. And he was talking about all these early tech demo-y VR things where you'd just be sat in one place and you're kind of, you're just picking up objects and chucking them around and things, and that's kind of the gimmick. But what I think he was trying to impress on his viewers is that they've taken that gimmick, or what was the entire game for a lot of those early programs, and implemented it into a wider game in such a way that has really, really increased the immersion to an extent that he was really, really excited about this new feature and just ended up playing with it for ages. I think most people have, and it's the same thing. They've got sort of pens in Half-Life Alyx you can just pick up and just write on stuff, you know.
The famous whiteboard, yes.
The whiteboards and the piano that you can play in Half-Life, and the way that had altered certain parts of the game where you have to be really quiet and you have to, like, I think trace a wire through the walls, and you're holding a little scanner in your hand and it's really dark, and then you accidentally knock over a bottle. It's all these little bits of immersion, but it's a really tiny feature of a game that he spins out into a 25-minute long video, and you look at it and you go, actually, oh, what's 25 minutes? But he has incredibly engaging videos, and you've got to check them out if you're into video games and like a certain academic slant on them sometimes, a little bit thinky about them. Jacob Geller on YouTube, he's only got 35 videos, but they are incredibly well-crafted. He deserves many, many views. Jacob Geller, who's next?
Right, so this is one that crept into my YouTube stream a couple of days ago, and it just pricked my attention really quickly. Not so much what the content was, although that's quite interesting. It was how it was being achieved. Mm. So the title of the channel is, and we'll have another go because I'm going to mangle this completely, and I think you guys helped me out before, it's Dennis, and how does he pronounce it?
We went for Dennis Shirayev. I think that's what we agreed. So, I'm very sorry, so if we failed in
Dennis
pronouncing
it. Dennis is spelled D-E-N-I-S, and then I'm not even...
Shirayev.
Shirayev, spelled S-H-I-R-Y-A-E-V.
We've probably got it wrong, I'm so sorry.
Anyway... So the first video that just caught my eye, because it was just interesting, it was a very old piece of film, and it was at 4K and 60 frames a second. Oh. So it's been enhanced. And I watched it, and it was very good, because I'm sure you've all seen these sort of turn-of-the-century films that are normally sort of very low frame rate. I don't know what they are, sort of 12, 14 frames a second or something really low, all very jerky. And then with the right kind of processing, you up the frame rate to 60 frames a second and then get the high resolution, and suddenly everyone's moving in a very natural way, how you expect modern video. So he's only done a few videos, but what I realised, he's doing the processing. So he's getting these bits of video and processing them, and he's only got a total of, I think, 18 videos, and one of them's something completely separate. It looks like some sort of... I don't know what it is, but that's from 8 years ago. And then suddenly a year ago, he started doing these sort of upscaling enhanced video. So he's done quite a few of those, and they're all good. They're all period stuff. They've even got the famous train arriving at the station.
Lumiere Brothers.
Lumiere Brothers, that's it. Terrible.
1896.
Yes, but it looks all, as you can see, it looks all nice smooth. And
that's fantastic.
Yes. So, and he even tells you what programs he's using.
Yeah.
So he's using neural network.
Interesting.
Oh, my, AI then.
Yeah, so he's using various forms of AI. Then the one that really caught my attention is just done one video so far. So he gets, he's got scans of very famous portraits, like the Mona Lisa. And then with the AI, it finds what the real person would look like.
Hmm.
So whether it's just taking lots of photographs from the internet and doing it, it's a bit like the Google software that was looking at cats, wasn't it? And eventually knew what it could identify a cat.
Google Dreams or something? Is it something
like? Because you can actually get time on that. So I'm wondering whether he's using that or a different algorithm. So he does a whole number of paintings. So as I say, they scan really quite quickly. And he did this one as a sort of alternative because he'd done one of... Nazi Germany, and it'd been pulled by copyright holder or something.
Was
like
it
that.
The
had a strike on it or something like that.
NVIDIA stuff involved.
Yes, so he'd increased it. So he was saying that also looks like that, I don't know whether GeForce are actually sponsoring him, or certainly he's using quite a hulking great...
showing off the Quadro or Quadros that he's
so
got.
So he's using that for processing. So it goes into it, but eventually he gets up to this bit
Mona Lisa here.
He's sort of starts scanning them.
Whoa, okay, what?
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it goes from being the Mona Lisa to the very much what you could imagine the real person looking like, and animated as well.
That's
moving.
Absolutely nuts.
Some of it's got a bit of the uncanny valley about it, but a lot of it, it does look, when it goes from... Then he goes through a whole selection of other famous paintings.
Okay, we got self-portrait with thorn necklace and hummingbird, Frida Kahlo, I think that was.
And she was a very strange person anyway, and then it sort of does this weird scan. So whether it's getting the source material from, whether it's getting lots of photographs and just compiling it, but it's...
Oh, yeah, that's making me think of some of the Oblivion NPCs, but a bit better.
Yeah, but it's quite impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got this strange... I don't know how to describe it.
I quite like it. It gives you that kind of a peek into what perhaps the studies of these, the actual models were might have been like.
The Birth of Venus, Sandro Botticelli.
Yeah, and then obviously a lot of people are familiar with the picture. But it zooms in on Venus's face. Then he starts processing it, sort of straightens it up. Then hits it with the... I don't know how long this processing takes. I think it takes several weeks.
It's got to.
This is a speeded up version. And suddenly it gets this very natural... But then it's actually rotating it. So you start getting sort of what that person... Because in most cases, these stylized religious paintings, they'd have models in the studio for all this sort of thing. So there would be potentially a real person behind this.
Yeah.
And this one's particularly.
Oh yeah.
So Girl this is Van Meer's Girl with a Pearl Earring, which is in its own right because the theory is that Van Meer was using a kind of very primitive camera to paint this. So it's actually mechanically, it's not done by eye.
Yeah.
So then you superimpose this 21st century technology on top and you get this sort of potentially what the real person would have looked like.
That is super cool.
Yeah, it's weird. So I would definitely recommend...
Yeah, you got to check this out. This is amazing.
So it just sort of appeared like magic in my YouTube, as these things do. You know, I don't know how the algorithm works. It obviously thinks you're going to be interested in this. Have a cop this.
Yeah, now I'm thinking of sort of camera technologies and such like... I watched a video by Corridor Digital, one of their, I think, VFX artists react ones, where they were looking at Mary Poppins, you know, the bit where it goes into the semi-animated part, and they were using a kind of green screen-ish technology that can't be done anymore. And this is from 68 or something. So they had one of the Technicolor cameras, which was, I think, three strips of film, one for red, one for green, one for blue, and they had... They sort of adapted it, so they had one film strip for just general film and colour. Then they had another one and used some special light, which just got them like a black and white image, but it was all kind of silhouette, so they could use that to to kind of get transparency on green screen. So if you know things about visual effects and all that, if you've got a green screen and you've got glasses or like people's hair or transparent clothing and things, it's a nightmare to try and key it properly and not lose bits. But this works perfectly, like absolutely perfectly. No weird edges, the transparency works, and it's from 1968. And the reason we can't do it anymore is because there's like a prism in the camera that splits your regular or pretty much your full color and then splits off one really, really narrow band of visible light, which they use to get that kind of black and white silhouetting type thing. And we don't have the technology to replicate that prism somehow. Like, how can we not do that?
I suspect it's more a case of it being a bit of a lucky one. Unviable,
maybe. Oh, maybe, yeah. But it's super cool, though. Thing that we can't do that, and it was like... Is it Mary Poppins?
It's so much cheaper to do it now. I mean, you can green screen without the screen, as we found out.
No,
with
but
Zoom.
We can't really do it to the kind of the level that they
did.
Not
to that fidelity.
No. Yeah, yeah.
I can definitely see that because
totally.
You get the flaring and you get the sort of
the Zoom fake green screen is absolutely horrifying.
Well, the fact you're doing it without a green screen at all, there's no screen. It's just using processing to understand this is you and everything else in the background.
Well, perhaps with the advent of this, the AI technology and these shaders that are coming in, maybe that will be one solution to adding transparency to objects that are failing to be captured on the green screen.
Yeah, people who know things about stuff, get on it. Luke, what have you got for us?
So I have the YouTube version of a podcast, one that is dear to my heart, and there's an anecdote behind this. Essentially, I went to Amsterdam many years ago for the first time, and on the way home my flight was cancelled, so I ended up sitting in Schiphol Airport for 6 hours waiting for a connecting flight. Now the podcast is called Stuff You Should Know, and it's just a really really easygoing podcast that goes through a lot of niche and or general information things and just kind of tries to dispel some myths or go through some detail that you may not be aware of, which is really quite nice. I particularly enjoyed an episode some time ago. So, as I said, they are on YouTube, and they do the video version of their podcast on YouTube, so you can see them in the studio doing their thing. But one of the earliest episodes I got involved with was a brilliant episode on an atomic clock that was being set up in the desert by, I think, Amazon, of all people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's essentially going to be... It's designed to be a very large-scale... beg pardon, it's not atomic, it was mechanical.
Oh, right.
It was a doomsday clock, essentially, is the idea, and it was supposed to be built in such a way as that it would run for many thousands of years without operator interference.
Yeah.
And they just went through this podcast meticulously, detailing all the intricate workings of it in a way that was quite accessible. And they've done this for many different niche things that you've never heard of. Another one that I quite enjoyed was the seed bank in up north in the Scandinavia. And it was just really brilliant. And I quite enjoy their style because they're very relaxed. There's a lot of in jokes when you listen to a long form podcast like that for a long time.
In jokes are great, yeah.
Yeah, and it just worked really nicely. So they definitely get my vote because the YouTube version of their podcast is just an extra layer to that kind of, I don't know, like that sort of fireside feel, that nice sort of, you can imagine them just being in the pub next to you, just doing their thing.
You put them on and they're with you while you're cooking breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nice one. What was the name again?
Stuff You Should Know.
Stuff You Should Know. I imagine they'll be on all of the usual podcast receptacles. That is not the right word. But we are as well. So if you're looking for Stuff You Should Know, you might as well also subscribe to Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you so much for listening. And hopefully you'll be here next week as well. Bye now.